Well, the title we've given to our current Sunday evening series is People Who Met God. And that's what it's about. It's about people who met God and what they learned about God when they met him. We talked about Adam. We talked about Noah. Tonight I want us to talk about a man called Jacob. Jacob came from a very special family. His grandfather was a man called Abraham. Abraham was a man who really knew God. There was a time when Abraham followed a false, empty, pointless religion. Abraham used to worship idols, statues, but God chose Abraham. And God called Abraham to leave the place where he was living, and Abraham did that. And God made Abraham a promise. He said to Abraham, "I am going to bless you, and you're going to be the father of a huge family. You're going to have more descendants than you can imagine, more than the grains of sand on the seashore, more than the stars in the sky. And through your descendants, blessing is going to come to the whole world. Salvation is going to come to this cursed world." And Abraham believed that. He believed that God would bless him personally. And more than that, he believed that through his descendants, this great blessing would come to the whole world. Well, from that day, God began to bless Abraham. But as far as the rest of the promise went, it was a long, long time before it started coming true. You can't have lots of descendants, can you, unless you have at least one child. And Abraham and his wife Sarah didn't have any children. It was only when they had waited many years that they had a son. And they called that son Isaac. And then they could breathe a sigh of relief. And they could say, well, isn't that wonderful? It's through this son that God will keep his promise. And then Abraham passed on to Isaac, when Isaac was older, the promise that God had made to him. So Isaac knew that God had promised that he would have many descendants, and that great blessing would come to the world through his descendants, maybe through one of them particularly. Well, Isaac married a woman called Rebekah, and they had two sons. In fact, they were twins. But even when you've got twins, one of them has got to be older than the other. Well, the older son was called Esau, and the younger son was the man we're talking about tonight, Jacob. Now, these lads, Esau and Jacob, were very different from each other. Esau grew up to be a sort of action man, always on the go. Full of physical energy, loved to be outdoors, and used to spend most of his time hunting. Jacob was different. He was a quiet man, always thinking, always planning. Didn't mind looking after his dad's sheep. You can do that and still have time sitting quietly, turning things over in your mind. But Jacob was never into all the physical stuff that his twin brother was so keen on. They were just very different. Now, both of these boys knew about the promise that God had given to their grandfather Abraham, and which had been passed on to their father Isaac. And they knew that one of them would inherit that promise in turn. God would bless one of them in a special way. And then whichever of them it was would become the head of this great family that was going to play such a key role in world history. That one was going to have countless descendants. It was either going to be through Esau's descendants that the world was going to be blessed, or it was going to be through Jacob's descendants. The only question was which it was going to be. And it was an open secret that Mum and Dad had different ideas about that. Dad always made it plain that he thought it should be Esau who inherited the promise. Mum always said that if she got her way, it would be Jacob. But in the end, everybody knew it would be Isaac's decision, Dad's decision. At some point, Dad would give his blessing to one of these lads. In other words, he would pray that God would pass on the promise to whichever he prayed for. And he was sure that God would pass on the promise to that one. Now, the two lads had very different attitudes to this. I suppose Esau would have liked to be the one who got the promise. But it really didn't bother him that much. Okay, he didn't much like the idea of his younger brother becoming head of the family. But all this talk about a blessing that God might give to him one day, and then the blessing that God had promised to give to the whole world sometime in the future. Well, it all seemed very airy-fairy to Esau. He was interested in here and now, not what was going to happen next week or next year, let alone thousands of years maybe in the future. All right, he believed in God. He probably believed in the great promise, but he just wasn't really that interested in it. I mean, compared with the excitement of hunting, I mean, compared with the pleasure of a good leg of roast venison or a good meaty stew, some real here and now pleasure. All this about waiting for God to bless him, and then God promising to send some great blessing into the world sometime in the future. Well, it all seemed very unreal, very unattractive. Esau was all for short-term things. Here and now satisfaction. There was one occasion when Esau had been out hunting, and he came home really hungry. And he found that his brother Jacob had just cooked a meal, a pan of lentil stew. And Esau says, oh, give me some of that. And Jacob says, fine, fine, we'll do a deal. When Dad dies, you're the oldest son, yeah? So you're going to get the bigger share of the property, yeah? That was the law at that time. Usually the older son got 2/3 and the younger son 1/3. Well, says Jacob, we'll trade places. Fair? When Dad dies, I get the oldest son's share. You have mine. And Esau agreed to that. He trades off his birthright. And what does he get? A bowl of vegetable soup. Rather than wait half an hour for one of the servants to heat up some food for him, Esau's willing to throw away an estate worth goodness knows how many thousands of pounds a little way down the line. So as far as waiting for a blessing from God that might take thousands of years to arrive, well, Esau's just not into that, is he? He wants something he can touch and smell and taste. Here and now. There are lots of people like that, aren't there? And you know them. You talk to them about spiritual things. You tell them that there's a God who has great blessings to give. And they say, well, very nice, very nice. And you talk to them about eternal salvation, about eternal life and glory to come, a world of endless pleasures given freely through Jesus Christ. And they say, oh, sounds great, grand, but I'm watching the football this afternoon. They're not interested in big things. They're not interested in great and glorious things. They're not interested in things that are a little way down the road. All they want is to have their appetite satisfied now. All they want is pleasure now. And while they'll agree with you that, oh yeah, those other things are important, they're not interested enough to do anything about it. Well, Esau was like that. But like I said, Jacob was different. Jacob was a much cannier character altogether. He was a man who thought. He was a man who planned and did the arithmetic. He was a man who was willing to wait for the things that he thought were really important. And Jacob could see that here there was something that was really important. To be somebody who would be blessed by God in a special way. To be someone who would have a special place in God's plan. To be someone who would have God on his side. To be the father of millions of people who would have God's blessing. To be someone through whom great things, wonderful things would come to the whole world. All that sounded pretty important to Jacob. Jacob wouldn't have said that he himself had had any real experience of God. He knew his grandfather said that he had had great experiences of God. He knew that his father Isaac talked about knowing God and loving God. But Jacob didn't have that sort of relationship with God at all. Jacob would never have talked about God as someone whom he knew personally, whom he loved personally, whom he trusted personally. Jacob definitely believed in God, and he definitely wanted this blessing from God, but he'd never met God. To him, God was a far-off, distant figure. Yes, the creator of the universe. Yes, the king. Yes, the ruler out there somewhere. But Jacob never expected to have any close encounters with God himself. He never expected God to actually break into his life or into this world. So when Jacob thought about getting this special favor, this special blessing from God, this promise, I think Jacob saw that almost as a mechanical process. If he could only get his father to say the right words, if he could only get his dad Isaac to pray in just the right way for him, well then God's promise would pass to him. God would bless him. He'd have all those descendants. A great blessing would come to the world through him in due time. But Jacob never thought that this would involve any real person-to-person dealings between himself and God. It was all business that could be done at a distance. A bit like winning the lottery. And you send in the winning ticket, you get back the check, and there's nothing personal about it at all. He wanted God's blessing, he wanted the big payout. But he never really expected any encounter with God himself. That wasn't what he was looking for. And when Jacob decided that he was going to get this special blessing, that he was going to have this promise from God, he took it for granted that it was his job to arrange it. After all, the God he believed in wasn't a God who was active here in this world, who actually got involved with people's lives, a God who could do things directly himself in people's experience. So when Jacob's father announced that the time had come for the big decision, for him to pass the promise on to the next in line, and when Isaac announced what Jacob had really known all along, that it was going to go to Esau, Jacob knew that if he wanted it, he was going to have to bring it about by his own cleverness, by his own actions. As far as he was concerned, there was no point in simply praying and saying to God, "I want your blessing. Won't you give it to me?" No, Jacob had to fix things. God helps those who help themselves. That was his philosophy of life. There's a God out there who, if you go through the right motions, you'll get the payout from him. It was his mum who showed Jacob the way to do it. Most of you know the story. Dad said to Esau, "You go off hunting. You bring back some supper. And then after supper we'll have the ceremony. And I'll pass on the promise. I'll pass on the blessing to you." And Mum says to Jacob, "Look, son, you're going to lose out if you don't act quickly. Get one of your goats. Slaughter it. We'll cook it. And then you dress up as Esau. Put on some of his clothes. And we'll put the goat skin on your face and on your hands. And then you go to your dad and you pretend to be Esau. And he'll bless you." Jacob does that. You see, he really wants this blessing. He really wants to be the person whom God will bless. He really wants to be the person who will have that key role in God's plan. But he thinks he's got to bring it about by his own ingenuity. He's not trusting God. He thinks he's got to manipulate God. God for him is not very different from the sort of idols that the pagans worshipped. Somebody you could use, not somebody with whom you had a relationship. Well, it worked. Jacob goes to his dad. His dad is deceived. His dad pronounces the blessing on Jacob, transfers to him the promise, declares, "You are the one now through whom blessing is going to come to the world. You'll be the father of the nations. You'll be the one through whom salvation comes to this world." Jacob's got what he wanted. But he's not got God. He might have now, in some sense, this promise, this special position, but he's not found any living relationship with God. He still can't say, "I know God." Jacob has to run. He has to flee from the family home. Because, not surprisingly, Esau is furious. And Esau threatens to kill him for what he's done. Jacob flees into the wilderness. He's heading for his uncle's home. But it's going to involve a long trek through the wilderness. One night, Jacob reaches a certain place. The sun has already set, and Jacob lies down to sleep. I don't know how you'd have felt in that situation. I think most of us would have felt nervous, knowing that there might be wild beasts prowling in the darkness. knowing that there might be all sorts of dangers out there. But there Jacob lays down. He takes one of the stones and he uses it as a pillow, pulls his cloak over him. It doesn't say he prayed before he slept. It doesn't say that he asked God to protect him. He didn't have that sort of relationship with God. But that night, Jacob had a dream. That night, God met with Jacob in a dream. Jacob saw a stairway reaching from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven. And God's angels, God's messengers, were coming down the staircase from heaven to earth and going up the staircase from earth to heaven. And there, above the stairway, at the very head, was the Lord. The one whom Jacob's grandfather had known. The one whom Jacob's father had known. And the Lord spoke to Jacob. I am the Lord. I am Yahweh. I am he who is. The God of your father Abraham. The God of Isaac. And the Lord goes on to repeat to Jacob the great promise that he had given to Abraham and that he had given to Isaac. I'm going to give you this land, this earth, and your descendants will be like the grains of dust on the earth. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. And I'm with you, and I will be with you wherever you go. And then Jacob awoke from his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't aware of it. And he trembled. He was afraid. He was terrified. And he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Here is Jacob's first real encounter with God. Here is Jacob meeting God and God meeting Jacob. I want to list out six things that Jacob learned in that encounter. The first thing he learned was this, that God, the real God, is someone who is to be feared. Jacob was afraid. He might have been nervous, as I said before, lying down to sleep in a dark place with danger all around. But it doesn't say he was frightened, but now he is frightened. Because he's become aware of God. He's become aware of the reality of God. Yes, he believed in God before. That's why he wanted this blessing to be spoken to him. But now he's aware of who God is. He's aware of the fact that there is a real God who intervenes, a God who acts, a God who meets people. And the thought of that makes him shake with fear. If you've never felt afraid of God, you have never known God. You say, well, I've always believed in God. I mean, what my parents told me about God. They've been telling me about God all my life. I know lots of things about God. But when you meet God, when you really become aware of him, then you will be afraid to to know that the great infinite Creator is there in all His burning holiness will make you feel so tiny, so insignificant. That's how Jacob felt. That was his first great discovery, that the real God is someone to be feared. And then the second thing Jacob discovered was this, that God is someone who is present everywhere all the time. Jacob says it directly, "I didn't realize God was here." Verse 16, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't aware of it. I never thought of God as actually being here. I never thought of myself as being in His presence. I never thought that He was here all around me in all the greatness of His being. The God who put those stars into place. The God who controls the volcano and the earthquake. The fact that He's here closer to me than my own skin." If I asked any of the children here the question, "Where is God?" you'd give me the answer. You know the answer. God is everywhere. And we know it in our heads. But it's different. It's so different when you feel it in your heart, when you actually become aware of the fact it's true, that God, in all that He is, in all the infinitude of His being, is here. That I can't escape Him. That He's here watching me. He's here listening to me. He's here pressing in around me. There's no escape from Him. The Lord says to Jacob, "I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go." Now, in one sense, that can be a great comfort to Jacob. But in another sense, it's the most terrifying thought in the world. That wherever you go, Jacob, you're not going to escape from me. There's nowhere where I am not. For Jacob, from now on, every place is going to be a holy place. He says, "I realize that this is the gate of heaven. I realize that this wilderness place, which looks so barren and bleak, is actually a house. It's the house of God. It's the dwelling place of God." Jacob's going to feel like that about everywhere now. When he gets to Laban's house and when he lies down in a tent there, he's going to be aware of the fact that that tent is filled with the reality of God. When he's riding a camel across a desert place, he's going to be aware of the fact that he can't outride the God who pursues him everywhere. Do you know it? That God is present. Have you been aware of it while you've been sitting here in this room? That He's been present here with us? That He's been watching you? He's been listening to you? He's been probing your mind, your heart, your thoughts? Have you been aware of Him? But it's not only here, because this is a church building and because this is a church service. Are you aware of that when you're in your own home? Are you aware of that when you're in the place where you work? Are you aware of that constantly? From now on, Jacob is never going to be able to forget it. God is present. Thirdly, Jacob discovers here that God is someone who is active in his world. God is not simply the detached observer. God is constantly involved. He is constantly active. That surely is the meaning of this great staircase between earth and heaven. Heaven is not just another realm cut off from this world. No, God's angels, God's messengers are constantly streaming into this world to carry out God's missions, God's purposes, and then going back to report to God. God is constantly taking an interest in all that's happening in this world, and He's moving it forward, He's directing it, He's bringing it about. How many angels are there? Who knows? Who knows? More than we can imagine. God is constantly directing them to bring about His purposes here in this world. Today, a certain football match is being played somewhere in South Africa, or has been played now. Do you believe that the angels of God were present on that football pitch? Do you believe that they directed which way the ball would break? Do you believe that God is active in something like that? That He's got a purpose in how that match works out? Do you believe that there's a staircase between that football stadium and the world of heaven, and that the angels of God ascend and descend there? Do you believe that there's a staircase between the office where you work and heaven, between the exam room where you sit your exams and heaven? Do you believe the angels of God are constantly coming and going, acting, bringing about God's purposes? Deists believe that things happen in this world just because of some sort of natural laws working themselves out. Bible believers don't think like that. They know that whatever happens in this world happens because God purposes and God plans and God brings it about, and He uses His angels to that end. And that's what Jacob's going to believe from this day on. Wherever he goes, he's not only going to be in the presence of the living God, he knows that there are going to be angels streaming from heaven to earth, acting on God's behalf, intervening. Fourthly, here in this encounter with God, Jacob discovers that the real God is someone who enters into real relationships with individuals. What are the Lord's opening words to Jacob? I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I am Abraham's God. I am Isaac's God. I have tied myself to them. I have a relationship with them. I'm bound to them forever. Abraham was already dead. He was in the grave. But God is still saying, I'm his God. God is declaring that he had a relationship with Abraham which even death could not break. A relationship that was going to be for all eternity. What's God's name? The Lord, Jehovah, Yahweh, He who is, I am. If God is Abraham's God, it means He always will be Abraham's God, because He never changes. He's Isaac's God. Not just that at particular points in Isaac's life, God does particular things for him, but no, all the time, constantly, eternally, God is Isaac's God. And that's what God is offering to Jacob. If he's Abraham's God, if he's Isaac's God, he can be Jacob's God. Jacob, this tiny atom, can have a real relationship with the infinite, limitless God of the universe. They can be bound together. When I begin to think about that, my mind begins to rock on its pistons. How big are you? How big am I compared with the vastness of this universe? We're not even specks in the universe. Infinitesimally small. And who is God? He's the God who holds the whole universe like a marble in the palm of his hand. And yet this infinitely vast God links his life with us specks of dust. He says, I bind myself to Stephen Rees forever so that he shares my life and I share his. I'm joined to him with a bond that can't be broken. I'm Abraham's God. I'm Isaac's God. And I can be Jacob's God. I can be your God, he says. And then the fifth thing that Jacob learns is that the real God is someone who becomes personally involved in the details of his people's lives. That's what he's saying, isn't it? When he says to Jacob, I'm with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I won't leave you, he says. It's one thing for Jacob to receive one great promise like a package. As they say, like a lottery check. It's another thing for there to be a God who watches him every step, who promises he'll be with him in every situation. How can God, this infinite God, how can he be interested in every detail and every situation of my petty little life? And yet he promises to be. And Jacob is going to walk for the rest of his days in the consciousness now that there's a God who cares. That's what it comes down to. This God is saying to Jacob, I am going to care about you. And then sixthly and finally, Jacob discovers in this meeting that God, the real God, is someone whom he wants for himself. Jacob makes this vow in verse 20. If God will be with me, if he'll watch over me, if he'll give me food to eat and clothes with, if God is prepared to be personally involved with me, if God, this great infinite God whom I've seen in his glory at the top of the staircase to heaven, if this God is willing to have me, then this Lord will be my God. I want him. There's so much more that Jacob has to learn about God. And if you read on through the story of Jacob, you'll see how step by step Jacob's eyes are opened to see more of God and the way to know God and how God can be merciful to someone like him. But there's no going back from what Jacob's discovered here. Someone for whom God had been a far off, distant it has become the he that Jacob longs to know. Do you want to know God? Do you want the infinite, everlasting, inexhaustible God who made creation? Do you want him to be your God? Do you want there to be a daily experiencing of God? An hourly joining of your heart to his heart? Do you want him watching over you? You can have it. You can have this God as your God. He's not far from each of us. said Paul in the verses with which we read with which we started the service. In him we live and move and have our being. He's sustaining you at this moment. He's keeping you in existence. And he's doing it so that you can reach out and find him. So that you can know him for yourself. How can you know him? You can know him through his Son. The Lord Jesus said this to a man called Nathanael. And you'll read about it in the opening chapter of John's Gospel. You shall see greater things than anything you've seen so far, he said to Nathanael. You shall see angels ascending and descending on myself, the Son of Man. Jacob saw a staircase linking heaven and earth with angels ascending and descending. Jesus said, I am the real staircase between heaven and earth. I'm the one who really links God and men. I'm the one who really makes it possible for the power, the grace, the glory of heaven to come down to you here in this world. Jesus Christ himself, the staircase that links heaven and earth, God and men. You want to know God, then know Jesus Christ. Set your heart on him. Look at the man who was God. Look at him and the life he lived. That's God reaching out to you. Look at the dreadful cross where he's screaming in agony. That's God stretching his hand out to save you. Look at him rising from the dead. That's him triumphing. In order to be your saviour, there's a way in which you can know God. But it's not through your trying. It's not through making bargains with him. It's not through meditation. It's not through self-flagellation. It's not through trying to be more convicted of sin than you are. The way to know God is by coming to him through Jesus Christ. I invite you to know God through his dear Son.